Hey, I don't know if you noticed. Did you see the new addition to the office?
No.
I got a new vacuum cleaner.
Oh, okay.
Did you notice?
No.
It's an Amazon Basics vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. You're going to do a GeekWire experience with it?
I'm contemplating it because it's actually part of a much bigger trend. So it's this vacuum cleaner that's a knockoff.
We should talk about this on the podcast.
We are.
Oh, okay. Are we? You just jumped right in. Sweet. Cool.
So it's a knockoff. I have one at home that's by Dyson that we got at Costco, an Animal V6. And I think we paid like $400. It's amazing because it's wireless, it's cordless, but it charges up, but it's almost as powerful as a regular vacuum cleaner. And it's fantastic. It's like the best vacuum cleaner we've ever owned. And I was searching around because of the office here. Our new office was getting a little bit rough around the edges. And I was like, I want one like that. And then I was like, no, I'm not going to pay that much. That's way too much. So you'd be proud of me. I went on to Amazon.
How much?
$120.
I was going to say.
When I get stressed, I vacuum.
You vacuum? Yeah, you're like my wife. We've gone through, I bet, at least half a dozen vacuums in the last 8 years. In our house. It is a big, big pet peeve of mine.
Have you tried the Dyson?
We had a Dyson. We've had every brand. We've been through them all. Yeah. And we've probably spent $3,500 on vacuums in the last 5 years.
Have you spent more on vacuums than you have on streaming services?
That's probably not. But so anyway, I'm looking forward for the next vacuum when ours conks out, trying an Amazon Basics for $120.
You could try this one to test it out.
I'm not going to try it out at home, nor am I going to try it out in the office. This seems like your thing. This is your de-stressor. I don't want to take that away from you. I have a high threshold for filth.
Welcome to GeekWire from GeekWire.com in Seattle. I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
We are coming to you from Seattle, where we get to report each day on what's happening around us in business, technology, and innovation. What happens here matters everywhere. And each week on this show, we talk about some of the most interesting stories we've been covering. John, to kick off this week's show, I have a quiz for you.
I knew you were going to do a quiz.
When I told you I had a way to get into the show, I was like, it was going to be a quiz.
Yes, I knew it was going to be a quiz.
All right. What do these four companies have in common?
Well, wait, shouldn't you set it up while you're doing the quiz and what it's for?
No, because that would give away part of the answer. Okay. It would lead you too closely to the answer.
Okay.
What do these four companies have in common? Tableau Software, Avalara. Do you say Avalara or Avalara?
You say Avalara. I say Avalara.
The tax technology company. Smartsheet, the work management technology company. And Rover, the pet sitting company. Tableau, Avalara, Smartsheet, and Rover. What do they have in common?
Well, Todd, you did a bad job of setting this up and teasing this because I kind of already knew where you were going with this. Oh, by chance, would they all happen to be Next Tech Titan winners at past GeekWire Awards?
That's right. Okay, fair enough. You know,
I need a better quiz.
Hopefully people out there had a little bit more of a challenge answering.
But some
that
pretty
one.
Impressive companies.
This is my point.
Yes.
So a lot of times these award shows and awards programs can feel a little bit congratulatory, pat you on the back, and kind of insular in a community. And I really like the GeekWire Awards, especially in categories like this, because it can be predictive and it can actually be useful, much like the GeekWire 200 identifies the up-and-coming tech companies. The GeekWire Awards in categories like Next Tech Titan can be useful in pointing out the future. And here you have proof of it. These awards have been going on since the early 2010s. We took them over from Seattle 2.0. They used to be Startup Awards. And by the way, they're coming up on May 9th in Seattle. And on this week's show, we're going to be previewing them. You can get tickets and table sponsorships at geekwire.com/awards. Voting has ended at this point, but we will be naming the winners of the GeekWire Awards on May 9th at the Showbox Soto. What does it say to you that we were able to, through community voting, nomination by the community, our own judges, identify these companies as big ones for the future? And we were right.
Well, I don't think the community was right. I always want to emphasize that the GeekWire Awards are driven by
so humble
community nominations, first off. Yep. We take community nominations. There True. Is a judging panel then where we winnow it down to the five finalists, and then it is up to community voting. So really, it's the community picking the winners in this case. there've been some fantastic companies that have merged from Seattle in the past 10, 15 years. And so it's not a big surprise that they were winners of the Next Tech Titan Award.
You know, you look at this, and setting aside the awards, this is pretty remarkable. I mean, Seattle is known for companies like Microsoft and Amazon and T-Mobile and Valve, and you could go down the list. Starbucks, if you want to consider them an innovator, maybe not as much digitally, but perhaps in terms of their products. But here you have companies that many other markets around the country would kill for as second-tier companies. These would be the anchor tenants of many other cities across the United States. Tableau was acquired by Salesforce for $15.7 billion in 2019. Avalara was taken private in 2022 for $8.4 billion. Smartsheet is now worth more than $5 billion as a publicly traded company. They just passed $1 billion in annual recurring revenue. And Rover was taken private just recently for $2.3 billion. I mean, these are substantial companies. You've covered each of these companies over the years, John. Is there any kind of common thread among the leadership or among the approach? They're all, in some cases, at least three cases, they're all enterprise software companies, which plays into Seattle's strengths. Rover is a little bit different in that it came out of kind of a hackathon over a weekend. Was it a startup weekend?
It was a startup weekend. In fact, I was there. Did you know this?
Now that you say it, I think I recall this.
I was there at the birthing of Rover. And they actually were initially called A Place Called Rover.
Kind of a play on A Place for Mom.
A Place Called Mom. A Place for Mom was right. the nursing care facility finder. And this was the similar concept. So in some of these cases, it's pretty cool to have some of the history that goes even back to the very founding of the company. In the case of Rover, I actually filmed video of their original pitch, which is kind of a nice historical moment for that company. And so it's been fun to watch the ride of some of these companies as they've gone from a seedling idea up into pretty large and important companies.
It's interesting, and not to go down this whole rabbit hole, but you've been covering startups and venture capital in the Seattle area dating back to before the dot-com bust, so the late 1990s.
Late 90s, yes.
Eastside Journal?
Yes.
Seattle PI?
Yes.
GeekWire?
Yes.
Did I miss one? I don't know, maybe. Anyway, and so Rover, though, was started after GeekWire's founding. So it's actually pretty remarkable just the meteoric growth we've seen for some of these companies just over the past decade.
Well, that surprises me because it all kind of blurs together. I wouldn't be able to place what era of my reporting career that company was founded in. That's how blurry it's been and how many companies we've seen come across the transom over the years. And we should say, there isn't a 100% success rate on the Next Tech Titan, right? Just in pure journalistic openness and disclosure, I think we've missed, the community has missed some companies in the past.
Yeah.
In fact, wasn't Convoy a Next Tech Titan at one point?
Yes, yes. Oh,
and
my gosh.
Convoy did not reach Next Tech Titan status.
Well,
for a brief moment, they were worth over $3 billion, but I don't think that was the outcome that many had hoped for.
No, Convoy went bust. Of course, in between the honor in 2018 and the going bust in 2023, they grew meteorically. So you could say that in some ways it came true. And I'm glad you're keeping me honest, John. This was on my list. I did plan
okay.
to get to this.
Okay. I mean, going back to like the original commonalities that you see with some of these companies. So you had Smartsheet, Tableau, Avalara,
Rover.
What was was there a fifth in there?
No, those are the four.
Yeah, I think what's interesting in some of the cases were a lot of enterprise and built over a long period of time. I think the one thing where you've seen success of Seattle area companies over the years is not the Instagram style success where a company is formed and 18 months later, they're sold for $1 billion. I mean, there is a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that have been put into companies like Smartsheet and Avalara and Tableau. The interesting thing with Tableau is it did raise some venture capital, but it never even touched that venture capital, really. It just needed it as an insurance blanket before it went public. So that company was almost entirely bootstrapped to a $15 billion exit. So watching a company like that grow and succeed in Seattle is very interesting. Smartsheet has an interesting background because the founders came out of Onyx, which was a prior public company in the enterprise software space. And so seeing the repeat entrepreneurs come back and start companies once again is also an interesting trend. And so you start to see that flywheel spinning where there's not only a successful first outcome with a publicly traded tech company, there's a second one that actually, I believe, surpasses Onyx in value, at least probably many times over. So that's interesting to watch. And I think that adds to a tech community's prowess and how robust it can be, is having those repeat entrepreneurs come back and start a second or third or fourth company. I mean, in the case of Smartsheet, Brent Fry was one of the co-founders of Onyx. He then co-founded Smartsheet. Now, just in the news this week, we had a story about TerraClear, his robotic rock picking company, an ag tech startup that just raised $15 million. So he's already on his third startup and is of the belief that that company could also become a next tech titan at some point. So that's an interesting trend to watch with some of these companies. The case of Rover with Aaron Easterly, an entrepreneur who came out of the Aquantive ecosystem, which was a company in the online advertising space that sold to Microsoft. So that's kind of an interesting path there as well. So I love the storylines. We'll see who emerges this year. We've got five great finalists.
That's right. So our finalists for this year, who will be the next tech titan among these? Mother Duck, which is a serverless data analytics platform. Rec Room, this is a repeat finalist in this category. People want them to be the next tech titan, I guess. Their virtual reality community and gaming platform. StatSig, the feature management and experimentation platform, basically an A-B testing platform. Submittable, a social impact platform. And Zooper, a Seattle-based startup that provides field operations software to help companies manage workers across various industries. I do want to go back. I did have the to be sure portion in my notes, John, and Convoy was part of that. And you know what the other company was that's a past Next Tech Titan winner that at least right now is not in a good spot?
Oh, that's a good quiz question.
There we go.
Do you want to come back after the break so I can give that a little more thought?
Absolutely. Okay. After the break, we will have the answer to that question. You're listening to GeekWire, and we will be right back.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook. Right before the break, I gave John a second quiz. This one a little bit tougher.
This one's tougher. Yeah, I like this one.
There was another Next Tech Titan winner that, at least as of right now, has gone out of business, effectively. They were the Next Tech Titan in 2013 at the GeekWire Awards.
11 years ago.
Going back. But they did extremely well in between now and then. They also had a very interesting entrepreneurial journey founded by some people who had worked at another successful company in the same sector, generally, although a different flavor of that sector. 2013, they've been in the news a lot lately. People out there are screaming into their podcast earbuds.
I know. How am I not grasping this? They've been in the news a lot lately. That's a pretty good clue. Give me one more clue.
Oh, my goodness. Anything more that I say is going to give it away. It's just going to totally give it away. We even just had a podcast on them recently that you weren't on.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's the afternoon. You're ready for your afternoon nap, apparently, here.
I'm missing this.
You're going to kick yourself. I am.
Oh, I need one more clue.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
This is going to give it away. The founders came out of the online jewelry business.
Oh, gosh. Yes. So it was that business was Blue Nile, and then they went on to back Rad Power Bikes.
No. Are you kidding me?
I'm missing this. I'm totally.
Zulily.
Zulily. Oh, jeez. God. How did I miss this? Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
Wow, that was epic.
That was pretty epic. That was an epic miss. Okay.
So.
Yeah, Rap Hour Bikes wouldn't have been 2013.
No. But interestingly, though, okay, Daryl Cavins and Mark Vadon. I don't know. Did Mark Vadon also go on and back Rad Power Bikes?
Yes. Okay. Both of them were backers of Rad Power Bikes.
So let's state this all clearly because we kind of gotten it a little jumbled here.
Yes.
Blue Nile, two executives from Blue Nile, Daryl Cavins and Mark. Do you say Vadon or Vadon? They went on to start Zulily, which took off, crumbled, and is now being reassembled, at least from its assets, by the prophet, Marcus Lemonis, as our colleague Taylor Soper and I recently talked about on the show. And so Zulily was the next tech titan in 2013 Geekwire Awards.
I think they probably lived up to it for a while. I can't believe I missed that. That was pretty rough. Okay.
Okay.
Give me another quiz later.
It's all right. Okay. So a big thanks to Baird, our sponsor of the Next Tech Titan category. And also thanks to Astound Business Solutions, the longtime title sponsor of the Geekwire Awards, for making that possible. Once again, on this episode, we are talking about the upcoming Geekwire Awards, giving you a little bit of a sneak preview of the companies that you might see on stage May 9th at the Showbox Soto. You can find out more at geekwire.com/awards. Another category that really stood out to me, John, and this plays into a much larger discussion that we can have here in this segment, is Workplace of the Year. This is presented by JLL, our partners at the real estate firm JLL. And one of the things that stood out to me is that one of the startups for Workplace of the Year effectively doesn't have a workplace. They're remote first. I'm sure they've got some physical presence somewhere, but Arrived is a Seattle-based startup that allows investors to buy shares of single-family homes, and they're remote first. One of the judges, Kelly Griffin, the principal workplace strategy at NBBJ, the architectural and design firm, said, quote, Arrived went even so far as to create their own virtual office so team members can pop into virtual meeting rooms and offices. Acknowledging that people still need to connect in person to build relationships, they host two all-hands off-site events each year to reinforce their inclusive culture. Kelly Griffin called it a virtual workplace that seems to be working. This was fascinating to me, and in fact, I'm curious, you're involved in the judging, John. Was there a question over the years about how to handle Workplace of the Year, given what's happened over the past couple of years?
It certainly has evolved.
Yeah.
It has evolved. And it's not only Arrive, but you see Syndio, another finalist in this category, and likewise, yet another category finalist, also have hybrid work environments. So it's certainly changing, and I think it's tougher to really measure where a strong workplace exists. And I mean, Todd, you've written about other companies that are going back to a 5-day work week. Companies are all over the place on this in terms of remote first, hybrid, all back in the office. Some folks just swear that you have to be back in the office in order to build a successful company and a successful culture. Other folks have certainly pushed back against that and have found their own path to success. So I think it has made this category challenging to judge.
To me, it also becomes more challenging, to your point, to build a successful workplace. And the definition of workplace has come to include the virtual efforts, this mention of Arrived creating their own virtual office space, this gathering space. I think it makes a lot of sense to start to assess how people are overcoming the fact that they're no longer in person in some cases, and all the different tools and tactics that they're using. Depending on who wins this, if Arrived wins this, for example, I think it might be interesting to go in and say, what exactly are they doing, and do a specific story.
That's
on
a great
that.
Idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or have them on a future podcast and talk about their workplace culture. I think that'd be a fantastic idea, and learn a little bit more about how they're operating.
Because in many ways, I think if you're able to get this kind of recognition when you are remote first, you've accomplished something much harder than if you were all sitting around in the same office. On this point, just recently, again, Taylor Soper, our colleague, reported on some pretty radical changes that are happening in the office market Seattle area's office vacancy rates have climbed to 15.1%, the ninth consecutive quarterly increase. And there's really a lot of interesting discussions that are starting to take place about what the future of these office spaces are going to be like, whether they should be converted into residential, especially downtown, and where we all go from here. It seems to me, you mentioned the five-day work week that some companies are doing. I feel like that only really works, based on my experience and the reporting that I've done, when companies have instituted that from the start. StatSig is a good example. Vijay Raji, their CEO, made it clear that this was what they were going to do from the beginning. I think actually going from hybrid or full remote into a full on-site scenario at one company, I think that's almost impossible.
Well, Amazon started as a five-day in the office work culture.
Well, then back in the day.
Yeah, I'm just saying, then the pandemic hit. And they're now full remote, and now they're inching back towards getting more people back in the office.
Yeah, Amazon has adamantly denied the rumors that they would go back more than 3 days a week, for what it's worth, up until the moment they do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay, sure. I'm just saying there are companies that almost every company was be in the office pre-COVID, and the pandemic really shook things up. And I think it is a little hard to put the genie back in the bottle. Companies that are like StatSig that are just starting out, yeah, they can start afresh with whatever culture they want to, whatever culture they want to build. But yeah, it's a really tough thing to navigate in terms of figuring out how to build a culture in a remote or hybrid environment. It's tough. And then you add on top of it the challenges with the real estate space, and companies are trying to decide whether they scale back, how they redesign their offices. Do they take advantage of the downturn in office space to gobble up sublet space and expand? It's really kind of a wild time.
This is one of those stories.
You used to cover commercial real estate, so I'm sure you're interested in this.
That's funny. Yeah. As long as we're going back on the journalistic journey, yeah. My first beat in Seattle as a reporter was covering commercial real estate for the Puget Sound Business Journal, the Seattle Business Journal. I did that for 2 years. I learned so much on that beat. And you know, the amazing thing about it was real estate brokers, especially commercial real estate brokers, are the biggest gossips ever. It was like shooting fish in a barrel. I learned how to be a beat reporter, and I wouldn't trade those couple of years covering commercial real estate for anything, because it really taught me just reach out, ask questions, listen, take people to coffee, take people to lunch. Speaking of the value of in-person, you know, there was nothing at the time, at least, like taking somebody to lunch at the Metropolitan Grill downtown. I would walk away from some of those lunches and coffees and other things with like five stories, scoops. And it was amazing. I loved it because of records too. The ability at the time, especially because there weren't as many records online, to just do some shoe leather reporting, go down to the King County Recorder's office. It was my favorite thing to do, like on a Thursday afternoon, go down to the recorder's office and just troll for stories. This actually plays into another story that I've been following. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook. We've been talking about the GeekWire Awards, the transformation of what it means to be a workplace. And John, I've encountered this just recently in a project that I've been working on, and that is the series that we're writing about Spokane, Washington. It has been amazing, I have to tell you, how many people, prominent former members of the Seattle tech community, I've bumped into randomly in Eastern Washington, the other side of the Cascades, the real East Side, as they call it. Martin Tobias, the longtime venture capitalist and entrepreneur, is a great example. And he kind of ended up there by happenstance, but he was able to buy a much bigger home for a significantly lower price than he would have paid in Seattle, longtime figure in the Pacific Northwest tech community who we've covered for many years. And it's just amazing. Tom Simpson, the venture capitalist there, said that the pandemic was good for Spokane in many ways because they were able to see this influx. The population grew by about 7% from 2018 to 2023. And of course, they've started to see some issues with affordability. However, there's this injection of energy that they've seen into the tech community. And it really plays into this larger issue of the rise of the rest. Steve Case, the AOL founder, and his efforts to engender technology growth, startups, investments in places other than the major tech hubs. In many ways, remote work and migration, perhaps right behind AI, have become the defining story of the tech community and the way that we're working these days.
Yeah, I do wonder whether this trend will continue, because especially as you do have companies that are forcing people back into the office even 3 days a week, you kind of have to be within spitting distance of your headquarters at that point. And so I do wonder if that is going to turn around. I think certainly there are some companies that are remote first, and those people can be anywhere, including Spokane. But a lot of these bigger companies are requiring you to be closer to the office. And so I do wonder how this is going to play out and if that trend's going to turn.
There's something about being there sometimes. And on the subject of the Spokane series, I did some of the reporting virtually on Zoom, scheduled things, but some of the best stuff I got was just walking around, stumbling into something. One of my favorite experiences out there on my first trip was I went out to Spokane Valley to this place where there's all these office warehouses and big roads, and it's easy to get lost. And I actually got lost out there. And it was the best thing that happened to me on that trip, because I parked on the wrong side of the building and I happened to walk past a flagpole for Itron, the technology company that spun out of Avista, the utility company, years ago. The flagpole was dated 1995. So it's like real Spokane history. And then I walked through the former headquarters of Stay Alfred, the company that did short-term lodging that went out of business in the pandemic. And then I walked through a door that had a sign on it for Caspian, the company that used to be eTails that has just gone out of business. So it was like this journey through Spokane's ups and downs over the years. And then finally, I met with Jordan Allen, who was the former CEO of Stay Alfred, the short-term rental company, who's now doing a new startup, taking returned products and turning them into a marketplace. Long story short, you don't get that virtually. You got to go and see that in person. And I think that also translates to the in-office experience. There are times when you just don't have the same value created by people talking to each other through a screen.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's why I kind of like the hybrid approach, where you can get the best of both worlds.
I agree. That said, it's hard to manufacture the serendipity that happens when you're together all the time.
That is true. So. Yeah, and then with hybrid workforces, they tend to come in at different times, and so you're not getting that interesting serendipity that's happening. So yeah, it's interesting to see how this is going to play out. I do wonder about remote places like Bend and Bellingham and Spokane and Boise, which really did see a boom during the pandemic times, and just what's going to happen next in those places.
Totally. And I'm looking forward to tracking that in Spokane almost as a proxy for what's going to happen in all these other places. It's been one of the most interesting angles that I've stumbled across, the whole migration, remote work. Tons of companies moving there effectively because their CEOs have gotten there. And in fact, we've just recently run into the question of, where is a company based?
Yeah. Yeah, we have been grappling with that. Because with a fully remote company where their CEO is in, you know, some random part of Washington State and their employees are spread across, you know, 10 other states, it is kind of hard to pinpoint where their actual headquarters is located. Or in the cases of companies like Zuper, which is up for Nextech Titan, or Icertis, which is a past GeekWire Awards winner, where they are really split between Washington State and India. Mm-hmm. And they have a large percentage of their technical team in India and their headquarters with sales and marketing and biz dev here in Washington State in the United States. So that's also an interesting trend, which we've been writing about as well.
Once again, the GeekWire Awards coming up on May 9th. You can find out more at geekwire.com/awards. We've just touched on a few of the categories here. I also wanted to call out Geeks Give Back. This is not a voting category per se, but three organizations are being recognized in that category, which is presented this year by BECU: Coding for Cancer at Seattle's Fred Hutch, the Housing Connector Program, a nonprofit that connects landlords looking to fill vacant units with renters who would otherwise have a hard time finding homes, and a past guest on the GeekWire podcast, Oren Etzioni, who's leading an organization called TrueMedia.org that's using AI to fight AI deepfakes. This is an organization here in Seattle that is funded by Garrett Camp, the Uber co-founder. So those are all our honorees in the Geeks Give Back category. It's really a cool event. We're going to be talking on the podcast with some of the finalists at the awards. So listen for that episode coming up in May. And we hope you can join us.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. Hope to see you out there on May 9th.
All right, John, thanks for joining me for this special episode.
Great to be here.
Once again, you can find out more at geekwire.com/awards.
Kurt Milton edited this episode.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
We'll be back next week with a new episode of the GeekWire podcast.